Welcome to the Junk Refund Show, hosted by Alan J. Cook, founder of 1-800-JUNK-REFUND. Have you ever paid those expensive junk removal companies to take away some of your stuff? Only to say to yourself, as a truck drives off down the street, some of that stuff wasn't junk. Did they try to sell it for you and give you some money back? No. Well, now there is a company that can do just that. Listen to our weekly Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio TV to learn how one lady spent $375 on junk removal and got $3,200 back. 1-800-JUNK-REFUND represents the next generation of junk removal. Learn how to not only save your money on junk removal, but how to get some money coming back. Plus, purchase one of our radio vouchers during the show to save even more on your junk removal. Let's get the junk out of your home and out of your life. Now, with your host, Alan J. Cook.
Hello, everybody. I am coming to you live on my favorite time of the week, Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, where I get to talk about all things junk removal and some of my latest adventures and some of the projects we're working on. And speaking of projects, I am right now going about 55 miles an hour on I-270, headed north from Washington, D.C. to go to a scrap metal yard where my buddy June, who is here working with me today, is a great guy and a very hard worker, is going to take care of unloading some stuff, both at the scrap yard, then we'll go over to the county dump, and I get to just take it easy and drive the truck and be on the show and talk about all things junk removal. So I am very excited about that. I am very excited about what we're talking about today. They did a study, and I'm an entrepreneur, so this is kind of close to my heart, but they did a study out of the University of Minnesota a few years ago trying to determine what was the number one quality that made entrepreneurs successful. And the lady who did the study and kind of engineered the study turned it into a TED Talk, and I would invite you to look up the TED Talk about the word grit. Grit was the thing that was determined to be the number one reason why entrepreneurs are successful. They stick to it, and they don't give up, and they defy the odds, and they're just committed to trying until they win, basically. And I love that TED Talk. I really encourage you to listen to it, whether you're an entrepreneur or not. Learning a little bit about grit is a great thing to do. And my guest on the show today is a former Miss Utah, won the title, I think, 2018. We'll check with her and see. Her name is Jessie Craig Bailey. And this girl, this lady, this woman is doing some amazing things with her career that just get people's respect. And I'm so excited to talk to her because I believe, and we're going to kind of verify this as I talk to her, I believe she's a person that has a lot of grit. And I think I'm right. Her results show it. She just graduated a few months ago from law school at Brigham Young University. She won the title of Miss Utah. She didn't win the title the first time she competed. She graduated from the University of Utah, but rather than tell the story, I want to be able to talk to her and let her tell the story herself. It's just a fascinating story, and I think the elements that go into it are available to teach all of us something that we can apply to our own lives to try to get, as we try to teach on this show, some of the junk out of our lives, right? And we teach people about how to get it out of your homes and your living rooms and your garages, but we also try to expand it and turn the show into a show where we teach you how to get it out of your life. And there's a big need out there for people to de-junk their life, so to speak, and we try to help make that happen. So we are, to give you kind of a bird's eye view of what we're doing today. We are in, or we're in Sterling, Virginia, helping a lady clean out a home that she's lived in for about 30 years. And she is headed to a downsizing situation, a smaller home, I believe in Florida. I think that's where she's going later this month. And so she hired us to come in and clean out all of this stuff. It's an interesting situation. She has three large parrots in her kitchen in large cages. And those boys will talk to you like, you know, it's the neighbor talking to you from next door. They, if you walk out of the house, they tell you to shut the door. If you walk in the kitchen, they say hello. And you can't tell that it's a parrot talking to you. It just sounds like a neighbor or somebody stopped by in the, you know, kitchen, said hi or whatever. It's quite an amazing thing. And so it's just fascinating what you learn from going into people's homes at important times in their life when they're making some major decisions. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in time and time again. She had a bunch of jewelry. She had some gold rings. She had some sterling silver. And this is not the stuff that she keeps in her bank vault. This is the stuff that was just in a couple of bags in a dresser at her home. She gave us that to deal with. So I want to do a shout out to my friends in Vienna at Bullion Bank. We took the jewelry over to them. We got about $200 for the sterling silver and about $800 for the gold. It was $1,040 that we walked out with, thanks to them. And the great people, there's a young lady from Persia who works there at the counter, whose name I just can't remember off the top of my head, but she's fabulous. Bullion Bank in Vienna, Virginia, if you have any jewelry, gold or silver, whatever, diamonds, you know, any kind of stones, coins that you want to try to get some cash for, they do a great job and they can help you out. So anyway, we walked out with about $1,000 on that part of the deal. And now, the last few days, we've been hauling stuff away from this house. And it is kind of fascinating. The parrots are going to Florida, but apparently we are going to haul away the large cages that are there. So, and to give you a sense, I tell people all the time that I told some young church missionaries last night as I met with them that there's never been a time in the history of the world that is better to be alive than right now. The technology is unsurpassed. The ability to get around the world quickly is phenomenal, which I can tell you more about that. Just some recent experiences. The opportunities are incredible. The knowledge that's out there is expanding so rapidly, you just can't keep up with it. And the ability to communicate, just off the top of my head, just five or six things that make this such a great time to be alive. So that is relevant to me. To illustrate it, I flew to Kansas City, Missouri, Saturday morning to take a girl to dinner Saturday night. And I did that. And then at the end of that, it was about, I don't know, 9 o'clock, 9:30. I had a buddy that lives outside of St. Louis, 212 miles away, who is the bishop or the pastor of his local congregation. And he and I met 40-plus years ago when we were 19-year-old kids doing missionary work in Missouri. And I decided to drive the 3.5 hours east to St. Louis to be able to talk, to basically walk in at 9 o'clock Sunday morning and surprise him in his church congregation, which I did. I drove 3.5 hours. I got to outside of St. Louis at about 1:30 in the morning. The rental car that I drove was a full-size rental car. It cost me $50. It had unlimited miles. I just cruised on I-70 at about 75 miles an hour. Got a hotel, stayed in the hotel for free because I get points from staying in hotels and renting cars, so that didn't cost anything. Walked into church the next morning, Sunday morning, and it was fabulous. I surprised him. He literally called my name out in front of the crowd when I walked in and sat down there. Then found out that he is teaching the Sunday school class. He's substitute teaching the Sunday school class the second hour. So I stuck around for that, and that was fabulous. And here I am with my buddy, shout out to Chuck Nielsen, the California surfer who now lives in Missouri. Just a great opportunity. Then I drive 250 miles back to Kansas City Sunday midday to catch a flight, getting me back to Washington, D.C., that I'm flying on standby that a couple of other friends helped arrange for, and I am the last guy allowed on the flight. And I get back to Washington, D.C. at about 7 o'clock, and there's my weekend. I get home. It was successful. It was fun. I was able to drop in on my buddy, and that was great. And Monday morning at 6 o'clock, I'm on a flight in Baltimore, headed to Atlanta to go do a junk removal job at 10 o'clock, which I'm going to talk about as a part of this show. And I then went to a concert. I went to the Earth, Wind, and Fire concert in Chicago in Alpharetta, Georgia, Monday night, and then flew at 11 o'clock the next morning back to Baltimore. The flight to and from Atlanta from Baltimore was $15 each way. I get that rate because I'm a Go Wild Pass member of Frontier Airlines, and that's what happens when you pay $600. They let you fly for free for a year, which means you pay for the airport taxes, but that's about it. And there's an example. Now, again, and so now I'm back, you know, here in Rockville, Maryland, Thursday afternoon, doing a radio show from my phone, my iPhone. It will go out to 49 countries. It will be turned into two podcasts, and I will have the memories of this show and everything that we talk about for the rest of my life. And all I need to do that show is a phone with power. Power is critical, but I've got it. So I'm excited. I love to do these shows. I love to talk about things you can do in your life that make your life better and more fun. I love to have guests on the show that can do exactly the same thing. And a shout out to Don Newsom, who's our producer, who does a great job and is one of the co-founders of BBS Radio, for creating the network that we broadcast on. And he will let me know when we have Jesse on the line. And we will talk to this amazing young lady who is out in Utah just doing some stellar things. So I am right now passing Scrapyard Number 1, which is a very busy place with not a lot of room to pull in off the street in your truck and drop off metal. It's called Rockville Metals. But one of the things they do really well is they have a popcorn machine inside, so you get free popcorn whenever you go there. And they have a soda machine inside. You have free sodas and ice waters and stuff. And if you show up on a Saturday, this wonderful lady, this wonderful Latino lady, has lunch for you. Everything from, you know, burgers at McDonald's to chicken from Jack in the Box and whatever. And all you do is just tip her. The meal is free. Mm-hmm. And it's a delightful add-on to what is otherwise a pretty straightforward, simple business. But it works out well, and we love to go there, and they treat their people well, and it's just a delight. So I just passed Scrapyard Number 1. They were pretty busy. I'm going to go around the corner here to Scrapyard Number 2, operated by Sims Metal. Sims is a company out of Australia that a few years ago purchased Montgomery County Scrap, which was partially owned by my buddy Dave Caffey, who is I could do a whole show on Dave and how great he is. But he was one of the part owners here of the scrapyard. They sold it to Sims, and now Dave is probably in the Caribbean on a yacht, for all I know. But anyway, he's a great guy, so I love to go over and support their business as well. One little tip, just for fun, in the spirit of giving and how it's more blessed to give than to receive. One little tip is to grab some candy bars or even some of the Halloween size candy bars, you know, a package of those. And when you come to some of these businesses that you frequent, just start giving some of those out to people. I have come into these scrap yards with a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts because it was my birthday, and that's an excuse to celebrate. And so I start giving them out to, you know, the employees. And I hand out candy bars just for fun, Snickers bars and other things just for fun. And it is such a fun thing to do, and it catches people by surprise because they're not expecting it. These guys at Montgomery Scrap are now Sims Metal here to a barbecue. They feed you a free barbecue lunch, you know, in the summer. They often give out treats at their cashier's window. It's terrific, too. And they just run a really good business. So today we're now here in scrapyard number two, and the lines are not big. In fact, I'm pulling right up here, and we will toss off a refrigerator that is sitting on top of a couple of mattresses from a job that we just did. So hang on with me, and we will have some fun here. Hey, how are you?
Hi, how are you, Sid?
I'm good. We're just getting rid of the fridge.
All right.
We changed the plates on the truck recently, so
okay.
Just so you know. I didn't need to tell her that. She knew that already. But anyway, we are here. We're going to drop off a fridge. Then we're going to drop off a couple of mattresses. And they're going to pay us for the refrigerator based on its weight. And I will get to just stay here in the truck and do the radio show while my buddy June does all the hard work. And that should work out well for everybody. It's amazing to me. I want to tell you a little bit about this job that I did in Atlanta. A lady called me and needed some furniture removed. And when, it, again, it's just an example of how great life is. I fly to Atlanta for $15. Pickup truck.
Oh,
thank you. For about $70 from Payless Rentals at the Atlanta airport. I drive about an hour north. I fly down Monday morning. I drive an hour north. I get to this job at about 10 o'clock Monday morning. She paid me for the job. I gave her a little discount. She paid me in advance electronically through PayPal on Sunday night. So that's how I knew that it was a go. And so at 10 o'clock this morning, I'm in Atlanta. I'm in a hot little pickup truck, which is great. And I go to her place, and it is a condominium where you've got kind of two condominiums connected to each other. Hers is on the right side, and there's stuff she needs to remove. I'm gonna pause here for a minute while we take a break real quick, and we'll come back. I'll tell you more about this Atlanta job and fill you in some more on kind of what I learned and what I observed. It was really, really interesting. You're listening to Junk Refund Show on BBS Radio. We'll be back in just about a minute.
Have you ever hired one of those expensive junk removal companies, then wondered what they did with the stuff? Especially the good stuff. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we junk the junk. Recycle stuff like metal and wire. Donate items and get you receipts. And put up for sale the good stuff. And if it sells, you get some money back. Cynthia paid $375 for junk removal and got $3,200 back. Would you like to know how she did it? Tune in to the Junk Refund Show with your host, Alan J. Cook, every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time to get the junk not only out of your home, but also out of your life.
Hey, welcome back to the Junk Refund Show. This is your host, Alan Cook, and I am coming to you live from the Sims Metal Scrapyard in Rockville, Maryland, where we are dumping off a refrigerator. My buddy June is actually doing all the work because I get to stay in the truck and talk to my good friend Jesse Craig Bailey, who has done some things in the past that are just phenomenal and is continuing, thank you, is continuing her run of success. So Jesse, how are you?
You're so kind to say all those things. Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. I'm so excited to have you on the show. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how I know Jessie and a little bit about her, and then we'll let her kind of tell most of the story here. I met her back around 2018. I went to an event that I was kind of a sponsor of and a speaker at, and it was an event put on by a mutual friend named Amy Morgan Davis, who was Miss Utah in 2004 and competed in the Miss America pageant in 2005. And it was a fabulous event to go to because most of the people there are beauty pageant winners. And that's not me. I'm not one of those. But Jessie Craig at the time, I believe, was the reigning Miss Utah. And that's where I met her, was at that event. Does that sound right, Jessie?
Yes, that's exactly right. It was such a fun event. I can't believe that's 6 years ago now. That's crazy.
I know. Isn't that amazing? And
yeah.
I just wanted to start off with kind of like where every great story starts. It seems to start with a really good mom. And your mom, Elizabeth Johnson Craig, is a friend of mine. I don't know that I've ever met her personally. I've just communicated with her a little bit through Facebook and other means. Only because she was Miss Utah, I believe, in 1991. And this is very rare. I don't know if this has ever happened where a mother and daughter have both won that title. Has that ever happened before?
No, we were the first mother-daughter duo, and it was really exciting. It's fun because, I mean, I got to grow up watching my mom always be involved with the Miss Utah organization, and then now it's even more fun because we have this forever pageant bond, and we can just talk about pageants for like 5 hours straight. So, yeah, it's fun that we have that little, I guess, piece of Utah lore that we both share now.
I think that is remarkable. And I thought, well, I wonder what it's like when you're growing up in a home and your mom is Miss Utah. Do you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, man, this is the greatest thing in the world because I've got everything I need right here. She can teach me how to be beautiful, how to be talented, how to be poised, how to handle pressure. Or do you wake up in the morning and go, oh, crap, how do I live up to this reputation that this amazing lady has? I'll never be able to you know, match her. Do you have any comments on that by chance?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I know my mom is fantastic, and I think it's definitely a mix because I'm like, yes, I wake up and I think, oh, my gosh, she knows everything. She's an incredible public speaker. She knows everything from pageants A to Z. But then also it is intimidating because she's done so many amazing things. But my mom's a very unique person in that she just wants everyone around her to shine as bright as they can. And so she never put any kind of pressure on me or my siblings to even to ever do pageants, to do anything. She wanted us to be our own people and just tried to help us succeed in whatever we wanted to do. So she's fantastic.
So when you were five, they didn't necessarily start putting you in pageant competitions and kind of outline your destiny for you. She basically helped you develop your own talents with whatever you'd like to do, and she was a big supporter.
Yes. Thankfully, it was not a toddlers in charge situation. I feel like had I been forced to do pageants, I would have just ended up hating them, but she always, from the beginning, would say to me, if you want to do this, then I'm happy to help you with anything you want, but it's on you and it's your choice. And so I was always really grateful that she just put the ball in my court and I never felt like I had to be involved at all.
That's brilliant. Hats off to your mom. I think at the time she competed in the Miss Utah pageant, my sister Debbie was her roommate, I believe. And I've got another sister in Lyndon who knows your mom. So those are kind of connections that I have with your wonderful mom, but I just think that's fabulous. You competed, just a little bit about your pageant history. Now I want to talk about some of the other things you've done recently. In order to compete in the Miss Utah pageant, you have to win a preliminary pageant. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So you have to essentially have a title from your city. So I was Miss Orem, and then if you're not representing a city, then you have to win a different kind of prelim. They call it open pageants. And those are mainly just designed for women who want to go back and have another shot at becoming Miss Utah. So, yes, you have to win a preliminary title in order to compete at the state level.
I'm an Orem guy originally. I went to Orem High School. Did you win the Miss Orem pageant the first year that you entered?
I did. I was so excited to win it because I knew if I wanted to go to Miss Utah, I'm like, I want to be Miss Orem because it's my hometown. It's where I went to high school. So, yeah, I did.
Fabulous. Now, you won the Miss Orem title in about 2016, 15, somewhere in there?
Hold on. Yeah, 2015, which is crazy because it's almost been 10 years, so I'm starting to feel old.
So you win the Miss Orem pageant. You compete against approximately how many other young women?
Local city pageants, they're a little bit smaller, so I think it was something like 10 to 14 contestants were competing that year.
Great. Okay, and you win that title, and then you're able to compete in the Miss Utah title or the pageant the next year. And
yes.
So you enter that, and you compete there. You're a fabulous violinist. I got to ask you, how old were you when you started playing the violin?
Oh, thank you. I started playing the violin at 5, but I don't think my heart wasn't really in it, but if any 5-year-old's heart isn't really in it. And I didn't really start actually taking it seriously and, like, buckling down with my teacher until I was 8 years old.
And I'm fascinated by your talent. I know you play Flight of the Bumblebee, and I'm sure a billion other, you know, songs, and you do it flawlessly, and it's really an amazing thing. Tell me what happened the first year that you competed for the Miss Utah title.
You're so nice to say that. I going to compete for the Miss Utah title, I felt like a kid in a candy store because I've been a pageant junkie for almost my entire life. So I love knowing the history of pageants. I love knowing who was Miss Utah and what year and what her talent was and who won what prelim. So I'd always kind of been an observer in the pageant realm because my mom would always bring people over to our house to help them train, to help them prepare to compete for Miss Utah or any other title. So going to Miss Utah, I feel like I was just really excited and elated to be there. I remember just stepping onto the stage when we did our opening number dance for the first time, just tearing up and getting so excited that I was there. And I remember there was a little bit of a switch towards the end of the Miss Utah week where I kind of realized, oh, like I'm actually here now. I'm not an observer. I'm in this and I'm really enjoying it. And I started to realize partway through that week, like, oh, I think I actually want to be Miss Utah. Because up until that point, I think I'd just been preparing as hard as I could because I wanted to make myself proud and I wanted to make my mom proud. But partway through that week, I realized, oh, I actually do want to do this. So I was lucky enough to place as first runner-up my first time at Miss Utah. And immediately I knew, I'm like, I need to go back because I want to be Miss Utah. It's a done deal. It's going to happen. Or I wanted it to happen.
That is a great summary. I was very curious when you compete the first time. And you end up first runner-up. They announce your name as the first runner-up, and then they announce the Miss Utah name second, right? Isn't that the way it's done?
Yeah, they'll announce first runner-up and then the Miss Utah right after.
Then everybody knows who's Miss Utah. When they announced your name as first runner-up, how did you feel? You kind of summarized it just then, but tell me again how you felt when you found out you were the first runner-up.
I think for a brief moment, I was a little bit like, aw, dang it, because I'm like, I was so close. But that moment really only lasted for about 10 seconds. And then I realized, like, dang, I am so lucky. I'm so grateful to place first runner-up. And I was also so happy for the girl who won Miss Utah, Lauren Wilson. She'd been so kind to me and, like, a mentor and just a great friend throughout the entire week. So I walked away super stoked, and I got pizza with my family, and it was just such a fun night. I was just pumped the whole
That's
night.
That's great.
Thanks.
Walking off, it would have been nice. You
sorry. I think you're cutting out. I think okay. I missed what you said.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Did you decide basically that moment that you're going to try this again, this pageant?
Yes. I knew immediately because in the pageant world, they call it catching the pageant bug, where you just you catch it and you're like, I have to keep going. I have to do this again. I loved it so much. So that happened to me where I caught the pageant bug and yeah, almost instantly I thought, I'm going back. I'm going back. I need to do this again.
You don't have to win another local pageant, correct?
You do. You have to win. That's the tricky part of it. You have to win another local pageant every time you go back. So I competed, after my first time in Miss Utah, I competed in the Miss Greater Salt Lake competition. And so then I spent that year as Miss Greater Salt Lake getting ready with the best team of people ever to get ready to go back for a second go at it.
At the second go of it, what's the result then?
So at the end of the my second time at Miss Utah, I got first runner-up again, and I was still so grateful and so happy to be there, but it's honestly kind of weird when you spend an entire year really focusing on getting ready for something, and you're focusing on your weak areas, and then you get there and you're just kind of, you have the same result and you know that you got better, but that outcome is the same. And so that one was it was way more difficult for me just because I'd been so gung-ho the entire year. Miss Utah was always on my mind. And so it was more of a turning point for me because initially I was disappointed and a little upset, but at the same time, like, super grateful. It was just a whole weird array of emotions, but
yeah, I bet.
I was like so grateful, and I didn't ever want anyone to think I was ungrateful, but it was like, well, dang, I did want this job and I put my heart into it. Like, my friend put it perfectly. My friend who also competed at Miss Utah a few years ago, she's like, it's as if you're going through a breakup because you give your heart, you put your heart on the line for somebody, and then you feel like you get broken up with when you don't win. And then you just kind of
right.
You have to feel those emotions and not suppress them. And it's almost like you have to take the time, eat the ice cream, and just feel all the feelings because you put your heart into something and it doesn't go the way you hoped it would. But I think it's also my turning point just because I feel like I really started to more discover who I was. And at the time, I was in a relationship with this guy. And had I been Miss Utah, I probably would have continued dating him. But because I wasn't Miss Utah, I think we both realized, he and I, that we just weren't compatible. And so we broke up, and then a few months later, I met my husband. And so I think a lot of the time, like, had I not had that failure, or what I perceived to be a failure, and not winning Miss Utah my second try, then I probably wouldn't have met my husband. And that would have been awful. So I'm always grateful that I never won Miss Utah when I was hoping to win.
Now, see, this is what's great about you. See, I thought I knew the story, and I wasn't 100% sure, but I was about 90% sure. And I was right twice, and run up twice. And I think there are, you probably be, 50 women or something out each year that you did that, and you had to go win a second preliminary competition just to get back into the pageant. You know,
yeah.
You would think they would say, well, if you're in the top five in 2015, we'll let you come back in 2016, give it a second shot or something. The fact you have to go back and win again to get back in is remarkable. But here's the brilliant thing, folks, about Jessie, is she, I think there are a lot of people who having put in the effort that she did for 24 plus months who come away being told publicly twice, you're almost there, you're the first runner-up twice, I think a lot of people would have said, I guess it's not in the cards for me. I gave it my best shot. I've done it twice. I guess I'm just not supposed to be. And the reason you're on the reasons is you have grit and the ability to continue to pursue something kind of against the odds. And when a lot of other people would go, oh, nuts, I guess this is just not supposed to, this is not my thing. It's just not in the cards for me. So I want to know, after that second time of being the first runner-up, when did you decide
to compete again? So thank you for saying all that first. I also have to say, like, there are so many women in this organization who really, like you mentioned, suffer, well, not suffer, but they don't win very publicly. And I think that's a hard part about pageants is people know how many times you've competed. They know how many times you've won. They know how many times you've lost. And I'm always inspired by so many women in this organization who continue to pick themselves back up and get after it again. So it's one of the reasons why I love it so much. But to answer your question, I think I almost instantly decided to go back, even though I was experiencing a bunch of different emotions. I knew I wanted it. I knew I wanted to be Miss Utah. And so even though I was in a different headspace, I think I knew instantly I need to try this again. I can't give up yet. So it was pretty quick.
And it also goes back to what you said beautifully about how you felt the first time you competed and you ended up the first runner-up, is that you said you kind of knew this was going to happen and that you had to do it, and you just kind of felt like this is going to happen. And so then you go in year two and you get as close as you can get without being, you know, Miss Utah, and that's the turning point that I think a lot of people go, oh, nuts, I tried.
Mm-hmm.
You decide to go again. Tell me what happened. Just summarize for me what your third experience was like when you won.
My third experience was really special to me. I feel like my second year, I was really just focused on being as competitive as I could be, really targeting my weak areas of competition. My third year, I wanted to shift my approach a little bit, and I thought to myself, I want to live my life the way I envision Miss Utah would live her life, like the way I think an ideal Miss Utah or an ideal leader would live. So I tried to push myself in that regard, and what I envisioned that as was being more involved with community service just for the sake of being involved in community service, so not for posting it online or just to put it on my resume. I wanted to make sure, like, my heart was in the right place, because a Miss Utah is somebody who really just looks to see how she can help other people and love other people. And I wanted to really have that be at the forefront of my mind. So I started volunteering at Primary Children's Hospital and with a lot of on-campus organizations at the University of Utah, and I really tried to just have that be my focus, was community service and outreach and just loving people around me. And then I also, the third year, I also was grateful to just get college out of the way. I graduated from college in 2018, and then I also met my now husband, so we started dating. So it was a really eventful year, but yeah, I think the main focus of it was just love and just focusing on living my life as if I were already Miss Utah, so that it would feel more natural, ideally, when I became Miss Utah.
See, that is brilliant. The folks in professional athletics that would talk about visualizing, you know, the golf shot before you hit it, or visualizing how fast you're going to run the 100-meter dash or whatever, and then and kind of prepare your mind and then go out and do it. That is brilliant stuff. That, in my opinion, that's the way champions think. And that's the way great people think. They have the faith and the grit to hang in there. They use it as a turning point, not as a setback. They look for how they can improve. And at a time where competing in a pageant and it looks like, hey, it's all about me, this third time you turn even more outward to focusing on other people, which is a brilliant move for any of us to do, whether you're in a pageant or not. Focus on other people and what you can do to make someone else's life better brings you an awful lot of joy. How did you feel on stage when you actually won the pageant the third year?
Oh, man. It's hard to put into words just because it really takes a village to win. It's not just my win. It's like my directors, my friends, my family who stay up, who help me conduct a million mock interviews, who help adjust my costume. It's so many people. And so when my name was called, I kind of blacked out. I don't really remember my initial thought. But actually competing with my sister that year, and that was such a special experience because my sister was on stage, and they told her, Allie, you need to stay in place. If she gets called as Miss Utah, you don't move. You stay there. And she didn't listen to them, and I'm really glad she didn't. So one of the first, yeah. So if you watch my crowning video, my sister like runs and comes up behind me and hugs me. And that was just so special. Like one of the first people I got to hug was my sister, and that we got to share that experience together. And it was just one of the happiest nights of my life. Like truly, it just had been a long road. It'd been years of hard work and just years of my family coming back year after year to support me. And so just getting to see my family afterwards, and then my boyfriend, now husband, and sharing that with him and his family, and then going out for our tradition for pizza at the Pie Pizzeria in Salt Lake.
Beautiful.
Oh, it was so good. It was just one of the best nights of my life.
I am so thrilled for you. I can just kind of sense the energy that you have. And I want to talk for just a second. I'm not going to worry about going to a commercial break. I'd rather just talk to you for the rest of this program that we have, because I just think what you have to teach people is remarkable. And there's other parts of your life that I want to talk about as well. But I have to talk for just a moment about this sister. I didn't know how many siblings you have. I have since learned you have a brother who was just called on a church mission to Austin. I knew you had a sister, a blonde-haired sister. That's all I know. Maybe that's Allie. I don't know.
Yeah.
You might have a bunch of siblings. I don't know. Yeah. But there's a professional athletic family in the United States named the Cordas, who are arguably the most accomplished athletic family that there is. The father won the Australian Open tennis title. The mother, I forget specifically, was also a professional athlete, but I can't remember in what. The oldest daughter, Jessica, plays on the LPGA golf tour. The younger daughter, Nellie, also plays on the LPGA golf tour. And the brother, Sebastian, just won the Washington, D.C. pro tennis tournament that concluded about 2 weeks ago.
Whoa.
Now, how's that for an athletic family? Okay.
That's
now,
crazy.
But what I want to talk about is Jessica. Jessica is the older sister. Nellie is the younger sister. Nellie has won 14 times on the LPGA Tour. I believe Jessica has won on the tour. I'm not 100% sure. But the great thing is that the sister who's not in the limelight winning is the first one to congratulate Nellie and wait for her on the 18th green when it's obvious that Nellie's about to win another tournament. It's this amazing sister who is the first one to congratulate her and celebrate with her. And I was curious, I would love to hear, you know, what it's like from Allie's perspective when you grow up in a family where your mom was Miss Utah, your sister is Miss Utah, and you're kind of going, well, no pressure here. You know, what do I do? Give me just like a 30 seconds, a little bit more about your wonderful sister, Allie, because I get the sense that she is as big a supporter of you and your accomplishments as anybody in your family.
Oh, absolutely. No, she is such a great supporter and always so kind, because I really think it is a testament to her character that
she was competing in the same pageant with me, but she was just over the moon excited for me. When she didn't have to come up and hug me, she didn't have to be excited, but she was genuinely, authentically happy for me. And she's also had her own pageant journey where she actually competed at the National Sweetheart Pageant 2 years ago now, and she made the finals. And so it was so fun for me to be able to be on the other side of that and to now like cheer her on and be screaming for her. So it's been fun to watch her have her own journey in that. And she had the best time at National Sweetheart. National Sweetheart, it's kind of like it's very similar to Miss America. My mom actually did compete in National Sweetheart as well, back when she was doing pageants. So it was like really fun that we all got to have this full circle moment together.
I think that's just brilliant. Hats off to your family. I just think that's wonderful. Now we got to get to some of the latest stuff happening. I want you to just give me tell me how you met your husband.
Yeah, so we met on a dating app. And I remember when we did that, when I told my mom that, she was like, okay, you can't tell people you met on a dating app. But now it's like more, it's more how people meet each other. And it's the world we live in. And I was a busy commuter student. I was living in Utah County and taking the train to go up to the University of Utah. And Tyson was going to UVU. And so we just matched on Tinder, started talking about Harry Potter and really bonded over that. And then, we had our first date. And I just after the first date, I was just so excited. I was just beaming. I call my mom while driving home, just freaking out. Like, oh my gosh, I met the most amazing guy. The rest is history.
That's wonderful. You graduated from the University of Utah with an undergraduate degree, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What'd you major in?
I majored in both English and economics.
Okay. So, see, there you go. I thought you had a double major, and that is terrific. And then, more modern times now, you get accepted into law school at Brigham Young University, and you just graduated in, May or June from law school, mm-hmm. which I think is just fabulous, and your resume just continues to be stellar. What did you enjoy most or learn the most about your law school experience?
Oh, shoot. I could go on and on. I think what I enjoyed the most was just getting to know the people there. I was not expecting to meet so many wonderful people in law school because I just thought we would all be so stressed out all the time, we wouldn't even get to know each other, or that the professors would be so intense and strict, I would never get to see their personalities. But nothing could have been further from the truth. In law school, you have to really rely on people because it is very stressful. And so I had a bunch of study groups, and the people in those study groups became my second family because we'd help each other. We'd talk each other down, from late night panic sessions. We'd give each other pep talks, do stress walks before exams to get those nerves out. They're just phenomenal people. And the professors there, I was just astounded. It's definitely been my favorite educational experience I've ever had. The professors are just, they know how to balance just being fun and being humans you can relate to, but they also know how to explain really complicated things like the rules of evidence or how the First Amendment works. So I loved it.
That's brilliant stuff. I have to throw out the name of Brett Scharf. Did you ever take a class from Brett?
No, unfortunately I didn't. I've only heard fantastic things about him. I had a lot of friends who took classes from him, but unfortunately it didn't work out in my schedule. But I remember you asking years ago, you told me to keep my eye out for a few professors. And I did,
yeah.
I think one of the professors you mentioned was Tom Lee. So I did have Professor Tom Lee, and he was great. I loved Professor Lee.
We had a couple of these guys came from the Washington, D.C. area, both went out to BYU Law School. Brett, I just happened to know they were both in my ward and my congregation. I knew him pretty well. Brett is a Rhodes Scholar who graduated from Yale Law School and is one of the most brilliant guys I've ever met. But one of the things that I always brag about when I mention his name is his ability to just make you feel like you're on the same level as him. He's a great listener. He rarely wants, you know, the microphone. He cracks jokes just like everybody else, and yet you know that just by, you know, he's probably the smartest guy in the room. But he makes you feel like there's no gap between you and him. And that's a brilliant personality trait to not, I've always believed educated people never really tell people they're educated. They don't need to. They know they are, and they don't need anybody's, you know, praise. Brett is like that. I've always admired about him. And so I was just thrilled that he was, for him and for what he's done, and that you were able to go to the school there and et cetera. So tell everybody now, in the last like 5 minutes we got, did you just finish taking the bar exam?
I did. I took the bar exam, I think, about 3 weeks ago to the day, or close to the day.
sum that baby up for me.
Oh, man. It's a 12-hour exam total. It's split into 2 days. So you'll do a 3-hour session, take an hour break, and do another 3-hour session. So that's for 2 days. And you're basically studying all day, every day for 3 months. And I had to take 8 essays, 200, and 200 multiple choice questions. So it's a lot. You're tested on so much of what you learned in law school. So it's like this big, giant final boss exam. I don't know if you've played Super Mario, but for me, it was like the final boss, like Bowser, when you get to the level and you're supposed to throw down. That's what it
that's
felt
great.
Like. But that's what the bar felt like. It was very exhausting. I'm still recovering from it. I won't know if I passed for a few more weeks, but fingers crossed. Let's hope I do, because I don't want to take it again.
Good for you. That is a great attitude. Tell everybody about the firm that you're going to be working for. I think it's up in Salt Lake, if I remember right.
I'm going to be working at Ray Quinney and Nepaker. They're up in Salt Lake, and I'm going to be mainly focusing on family law and employment law. So I'm really excited. It's a great firm with great people, fantastic mentors, and I already spent a summer with them. I worked there as a law clerk last summer, so it's nice because it's just like going back to people I already know who have already been so great to work with.
That is wonderful. I want you to tell everybody if they would like to get a hold of you and talk to you more about, you know, working with your firm, or having you as their attorney, or et cetera, they want to be a client of yours, how do they get a hold of you? What's the best way to do that?
Yes, great question. So probably the best way is just via my email. My email is jcraig@rqn.com, or you can just even just finding me on Instagram, Jesse Craig Bailey. Either of those is a great way to get a hold of me.
How many years have you been married now?
It'll be 5 years in September.
I don't know your husband. Would you tell your stud husband that I just think this is such a great story, and I congratulate him for not being intimidated to ask out a girl that's got everything in the world going for her, compete in the Miss Utah pageant, et cetera. Okay. A lot of guys would shy away from that, because they wouldn't have the guts or the faith or the confidence that this could work out, right? And I think in the dating world, a lot of people will not try to go after their dream because they don't want to have their heart broken, and they don't want to miss out, and they don't want to lose. And because of that, they never try. And I think if people just tried more, they would have more victories. And would you just, in whatever way you want to do it, pass along to your awesome husband, who, again, I've never communicated with him, don't know him, etc. He's got to be a cool guy, though. Just tell him congratulations from me, and keep shooting for the stars. And I think that's obviously what he's done in his marriage, and it's working out great. And I just think it's a wonderful thing. I want to tell everybody else something else that I noticed that illustrates your character, and that is that when you posted on Facebook that you had graduated from law school, at the time that I saw this, I think somewhere around 200 people had expressed congratulations to you. And I realized, as I looked at the comments, that you individually went back to them and thanked them. for that. You didn't do a group post, which is fine to say, hey, everybody, you know, thanks for congratulating me on my graduation from law school. You individually, from what I could tell, you individually went back and thanked people for taking the time to congratulate you on what you'd done. And that says a lot about you and about what your time is worth. You have an ability in the midst of everything that's going on in your life, you have an ability to focus on an individual, even if it's 200 of them, you will find the time to do that. And that says a lot about your character and what kind of a person you are and why people should be your friend, because you care about them and your actions illustrate that. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that's so kind of you to say. I thank you. You're so sweet to me. I'm just really grateful to be where I am because of all those amazing people I've met along the way. I really mean that. I'm so blessed to have so many people in my life who've just been my biggest cheerleaders and supporters. And so, yeah, the very least I can do is just to say thank you. And I also have to say, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I have to say as a side note, not a side note, but my husband, I'm definitely the lucky one here because he's been the biggest supporter for my years of my law school shenanigans and everything in between. And he does so much behind the scenes to just be my biggest cheerleader, support me when I'm crying over a textbook. And I'm definitely the one who lucked out here. He's just fantastic.
I am thrilled for you. I could not be happier for what you're doing with your life and the direction that you're headed and all of the great things that are happening to you. As you can tell, I'm a big fan of yours, and I believe you have grit, and I believe you have a boatload of other qualities and characteristics that are going to bless your life and your family's life and others around you as you just continue to move forward pursuing your dreams. I just think it's a wonderful story, and I applaud you for taking the time in what I'm sure is a busy schedule and everything you got going on to be on our show and be a guest and just talk about what you've done. In the last, 30 seconds or whatever, is there anything else you want to say or talk about that we haven't talked about yet that's important to you?
No, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been so much fun, and I'm so glad we got to meet all those years ago. We can just have our friendship continue. It's great.
I think it's wonderful, and I think the way you carry yourself with all of your accomplishments is wonderful, and I think there's a lot people can learn by getting to know Jesse Craig Bailey, and I consider it a privilege to have you as a friend and to just be an observer from a distance and see what you're doing. But I love what you're doing. I love what you guys are doing as a couple and just your extended family. It's tremendous. It's a great story. Keep it up. And God bless you with everything that you're doing and that you're going after. You deserve those blessings. That's what I think.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your kind words. And God bless you, too.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Go get some pizza and have a good night, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for being a guest on the show. It's been a thrill. Thanks to Don Newsom, our producer, who always does a great job. It's my favorite time of the week, especially when you get to talk to the Jesse Craig Baileys of the world. It's one of the reasons why I always tell people there's never been a better time in the history of the world to be alive than right now. And that's what I believe. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week on the Junk Refund Show. And again, thanks to Jesse for taking the time to be on the show. It's been a joy. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Junk Refund Show, the longest-running junk removal radio show on the air. Join us next week as we discuss innovative ways to declutter your home, your business, and your life using 20 years of junk removal experience. Find out why we give out free ice cream gift cards to our clients, too. In upcoming shows, we will explore how to get the junk out of your relationships, your spiritual life, your waistline, even your travel life. Plus, call in with questions and situations you would like some help with. At 1-800-JUNK-REFUND, we are committed to bringing the next generation of junk removal, because not all junk is junk. See you next week on the Junk Refund Show, every Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on BBS Radio TV.